listen, listen, listen. God is speaking to us.
Kairos Milwaukee United Church of Christ presents Remember Baptism, a sermon by the Reverend Rick Skidmore, presented on Sunday, January 12th, 2014.
So John the Baptist is used to speaking large, speaking to the multitudes, to the masses. I mean, with his eyes bulging and mud in his whiskers, John preaches this kind of fire and judgment, talks about the winnowing fork which will separate the righteous from the unjust. And so large crowds gather, large crowds, mostly of faithful Jews, are drawn into the wilderness to hear this strange man and to volunteer for service, to be washed and purified and initiated into the struggle, to participate in this long-awaited new thing that God is doing. Rather than sweetness and light, John preaches that there's a disturbance in the force. John erupts with this message that through a crack in the sky, the spark of heaven will fall, and that the face of the earth is going to change, that it's time to enlist in this new thing that God's doing. I think John's message is in part a response to those ancient prophets who observed the alienated world in such need of God's care and cried out, "Oh, that thou would tear open the heavens and come down." So when John calls the people to the Judean desert to warn of this cracking open, this breaking up of the old order, that it was time to act, people come to him, and so does Jesus. Jesus comes too to be baptized and to enlist in this cause. What I like about this story is its grit, its blending of the holy with the human. I like it that Jesus' first public act is to get down into the mud and the muck of human life, where the rest of us live. Now, I've not been to the Holy Land, but I'm told that the Jordan River is anything but deep and wide, that it's really a mud hole surrounded by these marshes. The mud and the water, the sights and the sounds in this story, I think really remind us of what our incarnation is all about, what this holiness meeting humanness is all about, which is, among other things, a very messy business. And certainly this is a multi-sensory experience that is being described here. The holiness that was in Jesus is mixing it up with his humanness. And that ought to inspire awe in all of us. But instead, I think, you know, we have mixed feelings about this whole holiness becoming human mystery. But really, this is the basis of what baptism represents. It's an outward, visible sign of this inner event, this marriage of the holy and the human, embracing the physicality of being human, but also the spirituality of being a child, a beloved child of God. Religions, philosophies, believers and non-believers alike have a lot of trouble with this notion. Struggle with this relationship between the physical and the spiritual. I mean, we tend to want to put the spirit above the body as if we're somehow split in two. And then our task, you see, is to sort of minimize or subjugate this pesky body with all of its frailties and all of its needs and all of its temptations and demands. But here's the thing. We are not, you and I, we are not these wispy souls trapped temporarily in a body that is foreign to who we are. We are physical beings struggling to become fully human and at the same time trying to realize and embrace our identity as beloved children of creation. Both fully human and at the same time spiritual, beloved of God. people point to the story of the baptism of Jesus as a story about how special he was, but I think the story is about how special we are. We all of us are. And immediately after his baptism, Jesus heads off into the desert to try to figure out what it means to be Jesus. But notice he hasn't done anything yet. And already God is crazy about him. Already God is crazy in love with him, calling him beloved and blessed. Just like you and I in this very moment, no matter what we've done or failed to do in our lives, we are already God's beloved. There's nothing you have to do to earn this. It comes into the world with us. It's part of who we are. We are God's beloved, God's very own. This is stamped into our DNA. At the Martin Luther King Center that I was telling you about earlier, there is a copy under glass. There is a copy of the notes that Dr. King had before him when he gave his very last speech, sermon, the mountaintop speech. That was on April 3rd, 1968, at the Masonic Temple in Memphis. It was the day before that he was murdered. And he was there. He was there to support the sanitation workers' strike. But what is stunning about these notes is how sparse they are. It's like two pages, half pages, what looked like they were on stationery paper, typed, double-spaced, that kind of runs down the different things that Dr. King wanted to speak about that night. But written in the margin of one of those pages, and what I would guess would have been his own handwriting, are two words: remember baptism. What was he thinking? Well, what do you think he was intended to say by that? I mean, was he going to say something at some point that was sort of anecdotal about his own baptism? Or maybe he was going to bring up baptism as a way to enlist, to initiate the people who were there that night in this holy struggle for human rights. But the thing is, nowhere in his speech that night is the word baptism used. So maybe he scribbled those words as a reminder to himself, a reminder of his own calling, a reminder of who he was and whose he was. We'll never know. The Taylor Branch, in his biography of Dr. King, writes about how lonely and how troubled Martin Luther King was in the last year of his life. He was battling back depression and despair, and he'd been trying to inspire and to win back some of that lost enthusiasm that people had had for his nonviolent approach to social justice. And so maybe those words, remember baptism, were an effort to kind of seek some personal equilibrium in his own storm-tossed journey that he was on, a way to kind of help him keep his bearings, to ground himself in the assurance that he was indeed God's beloved and faithful servant. I mean, when we baptize people, we are proclaiming, we are sacramentalizing not only that they're beloved children of God, but that they are beloved servants of God. Servants. I mean, the church doesn't dispense baptism as a way to acquire new members or more members, but rather in order to consecrate human beings to God and to communicate to that person that they are a divine gift, but also that they are a divine servant, that they are a conduit for God's Spirit, that they are called to serve the cause of Christ in a world that is broken, to serve that cause in all of its wildness and all of its beauty. early on, I used to think it was my job to attract people into the church. Because, I mean, the church is a good place to be. But after doing this work for 30-some years, I've come to realize that God isn't calling people to church. God's calling people to mission, which can be said in shorthand as care for the sick, feed the hungry, bring good news to the poor and to the oppressed. I mean, yeah, it's more complex than that, but the idea is that instead of God having a mission to the church, God has a mission to humanity, and the church is one vehicle for doing that. Martin Luther King put it this way: the world is God's parish, and it ought to be ours as well. That's the mission that pushes us out the doors and into the streets, and where people would never set foot in a church actually live. And in that process, lives get changed. People change. Who knows? Maybe even the whole world changes. So one of the most poignant, beautiful baptisms that I ever had a hand in happened some years back. I was working as a chaplain at a detox inpatient treatment center in downtown Portland. And those who were nearing completion of this program, it was a 21-day program, they were granted supervised passes the last week that they were there. They were granted these passes so that they could go out into the great wide open and have a few hours sort of test the waters in the outside world. And most of the people just wanted to drink in fresh air and watch people. So we would leave the hospital, and I'd take them over to the Galleria, and we'd just sit there and drink coffee. Or sometimes we would walk over to O'Brien Square, which is a small park and fountain between right up from Burnside, between Burnside and Stark, and also known as Paranoid Park, as it was frequented by drug users and street kids and sex workers and the homeless. And so one day we're sitting in the park, and one of the clients asked me if I would baptize him in the fountain there. This was his third time through the program, and he hoped that maybe this time he would be successful in you know, leaving the shadow lands of addiction and stepping into a new life. And he wanted to mark that intention. He wanted to mark that occasion, that hope, that desire. So I said, sure. And we took off our shoes and socks, and we rolled up our pants and pant legs, and we stepped into the fountain, into the pool there, and I baptized him right on the spot. I told him he was a beloved child of God. I think those words are intended for all of us, every one of us. I believe that that's what God is saying to us, that, you know, no matter what happens in life, in your world, no matter how low or discouraged you feel, no matter what's happening around you, that remember and know that you are a child of God. You are beloved. And you'd think in our age, when we spend so much time talking about self-esteem, you'd think we'd love to hear the good news that we are beloved, that we are affirmed by love, that God is crazy in love with us. You may have noticed that there's a gaggle of little girls in this church who run around after church and stuff little love notes in people's pockets. Usually they say, "You were awesome." And I don't think this was anything that came out of a Sunday school class. I think they just took it upon themselves to do this. You see, they get it. They get it. You are beloved. You are a child of God. So life is, yes, utterly mysterious and We live here in the unknown. And in the midst of all this, some of which might make us quite afraid, we need to remember that God is near. Just as God was near to Jesus when he stood in that muddy river with so much still ahead of him. And just as God was with Martin as he stood in that Masonic hall with the savage world raging outside and knowing that he was near his end. You are my son, my child, my beloved, with whom I am well pleased. So in this Epiphany season, let there be no doubt that we are blessed by God and loved by God and called, we are, to be conduits of God's grace, God's Spirit, in many myriad ways, from small kindnesses to great healing, from stories of reconciliation to newfound faith, to new visions, new hopes for this beloved and sacred community, yes, but also for the whole world. Peace of God.
Listen, listen, listen.